Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio program. I'm Susan Laris and Dan, and today I'm hoping you can hear me because I'm hearing a little distortion on the line. I'll ask my guest here in a minute. I might bring her in a little early to see if she can hear me well. But today I am bringing on the show Lorraine Flaherty, and she is a transformational therapist. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to do something rather unusual today and bring her on a little early because I want to make sure she can hear me. And if so, I will intervene in another way because I heard just a little bit of fuzz on the line, which is unusual. So, Lorraine, I'm going to bring you in early, and then we'll do your intro with you right here.
Okay.
Hello, Lorraine. Do you hear me okay?
Hello. Yes, I can hear you fine.
Oh, wonderful, because as I was doing the intro, I'm always conscious of technology here, I just heard a little flutter on the line, and I thought, we better make sure. So I'm glad you can hear me, and welcome to the show. And
thank you very much.
Now I'll go ahead and do a little introduction and interact with you at the same time. I know that you are a transformational therapist, and I have to tell you, Lorraine, I love that title, a transformational therapist, and you are the author of the book, Healing with Past Life Therapy, Transformational Journeys Through Time and Space, and you've developed a process called Inner Freedom Therapy. And you know what? As long as you're here, rather than my talking about it, why don't you tell us a little bit about what inner freedom therapy actually is? Because it combines many different elements that are fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. It's, in many ways, a process I've developed over the years through many different techniques that I've used. But I call it, really, it's like feng shui for the soul,
mm-hmm.
because it's a little like clutter clearing. So rather than just focusing on current life issues, I've realized that there are so many levels to people. We are multidimensional beings. So
yeah.
The work targets past lives, it targets ancestral elements, it targets future potentials. It also deals with inner child work. It deals with just reprogramming, resetting, letting go of anything that doesn't serve, and then reprogramming, resetting the person so that they can step into their highest potential.
Yes, yes. And, you know, what I love most about your website, which, by the way, I normally do give in the introduction, and it's on the show page, which let me let the audience know in case you can't see the page. Lorraine's website is innerjourneys.co.uk, because you are based in London. I mean, obviously, you're calling me from overseas. So is that where you're based, Lorraine? Are you in London?
I am, yes. I'm based in London, although I do seem to be spending quite a lot of time in the U.S. at the moment, so backwards and forwards, which is wonderful.
Yes. Yes, that is wonderful, and I might say to the audience that I was absolutely delighted to encounter you in Los Angeles when we were mm-hmm. at the Conscious Life Expo, and I know that was a wonderful event for many of us, and I'm glad that we did, because, you know, you have a very radiant spirit, shall I say. You're just very natural. I can see how it would really put people at ease to talk with you.
Thank you.
And yes, and perhaps we can enter into this a little with discussing past life therapy. This topic has come up on this show before, and I feel that it's a very rich area of exploration as to, and this is such a general audience that we're speaking to, it's a personal interest of mine, I'll tell you, I stumbled on it myself long ago, is how do we begin to come to understand that even if we're not sure, we may have had these past lives, and how did you personally, Lorraine, come to this place where you are exploring past lives? How can you personally reflect upon that in your own journey?
Well, I think that many people that are on the spiritual path have a sense that they are more than, and that they are aware of sort of other aspects of self. And I know that growing up, I always had a sense that I'd been here before, and I used to talk about it. And I think that people just thought I had a very vivid imagination. But I was very aware of other energies. I was very aware of spirit. I had a visitation from my grandfather when I was about 5 or 6 years old, which people might not think is that unusual, but he passed away when my father was little. So, you know, he was very much there in spirit, but I knew who he was. And I kind of learned not to share these things with the grown-ups, because they would look at me as if I was just telling stories or telling tales. But so I also found that in my own family, some of the members were actually quite open. They were quite spiritual. I know that my mother used to go to spiritual circles when I was at school and would often tell me about the things that she experienced there. So I was always open to the idea and studied all kinds of different processes, different sort of spiritual paths. Mm-hmm. Probably because I was raised into an Irish Catholic family, and the Catholic religion for me left, some of the teachings left a little bit to be desired, and I wasn't a believer in the fact that, as they taught me, you know, there was either heaven or there was hell, and if we behaved ourselves, we went to the good place, and if we didn't, God was going to punish us. That didn't really make sense to me. Yeah. And I perceived God as being a benevolent, loving, beautiful being, and I thought we could all talk to him. So it came as a bit of a shock when the priests were saying, no, you have to talk to him through me. So those early years at school also led me to a search into lots of different religions, and led me to go back to the earliest times of those religions, where I discovered the more esoteric sides, so the Gnostics and the Sufis and the Kabbalists. And, of course, I found that when you went far enough back, that they all talked about a space where we were a part of the divine, not separate from it. And they talked about the fact that we had this divine spark within us, and that if we became initiated into these almost secret societies, as they were back then, and we spent a lot of time in meditation and being attuned to these paths, to these ways of being, that we could find that space within us. So I really wanted that. That resonated with me, and I wanted to find that path, but it wasn't so easy growing up in South London. And there weren't many spiritual teachers around, so I studied books. I then found in places like the London College of Clinical or the College of Psychic Studies and various other places, courses that I could do, but none of them, I guess in many ways, none of them really gave me all of the answers that I was seeking, because I sensed that there was a path, a way that we could get access to that information. And that was my mission. That's what I felt my calling was, to find a way in which people could understand or get to that space. Yeah. And so, of course, it was then when I came across hypnosis and the idea of past life regression that it all started to make sense, because accessing it through the hypnosis state, which is just a very similar state to meditation anyway, meant that we could open up those doorways, those portals inside of us that had all of that information in there. And I know when I explored my first past life sessions, it just made sense of everything that I had believed as I was growing up.
Yeah.
So it found like I found the key, if you like, and it was the real discovery of why I was here. So it was an incredible moment when I learned how.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about your own past life that you discovered? I know that you talk in your book about being burnt at the stake. And it seems to be a common, I have heard, actually, I've got that one too, that I feel that it may have happened to me. And I have other friends in the spiritual community that seem to feel that way too. And it
absolutely
sometimes can keep us from saying our truth. I mean, I have felt that. And so I wonder if you could reflect on that, because I know we have any number of spiritual teachers who listen, who share in this, and we've had this feeling of, oh, you know, we're going to be punished, something's going to happen, and, you know, we have to push through that. So could you help us with that and tell us about your life a little bit, your past life, because it's fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. So when I started learning the hypnosis, I was training in clinical hypnosis, which I now teach to medical students. I go to the main universities all over the country and teach clinical. So it was very set. It was very scientific based, and I struggled to integrate the esoteric, the spiritual side with it, even though I knew that was my passion. So with one of my colleagues, I said to her, "Could you please? I need to find out if there's something blocking me. It feels like there's something holding me back from really being able to step into the spiritual path and do the work I'm meant to do." So she guided me back into a past life. And I had made jokes all through my early years about being burnt at the stake. I always said I must have been burnt at the stake for being a witch. Mm-hmm. It was just something that I said all the time as a throwaway comment. So it didn't come as that much of a surprise to find myself tied to a burning stake. But, of course, the beauty of the past life work is that when you go in with an intention, when you have a question about something in your life that isn't working or that's holding you back or a challenge that you keep reliving, you can go right to the source of it. You go right to the moment when that problem or that challenge that was set began.
Yeah.
And in this past life, of course, you know, when I floated up and out of the body and into what we call the transformational space, which is where the therapeutic work happens, with my overview of that life, I saw that what had happened was that I was a healer, and I was quite young. I was a teenage girl in that life, and my mother had warned me to be very careful about using my energies and not showing off to people or not doing things that weren't appropriate. And on one occasion, we were called into a woman who was pregnant, and my mother scanned her stomach. She was in real distress, and my mother said, "I'm really sorry, but this time round there's nothing we can do." Mm. And me being very eager and convinced that I had enough energy within me to heal this, to resolve it, stepped in and did the healing on this woman and her baby. And she visibly relaxed and she recovered. And anyway, a few months later, she gives birth, and bearing in mind this was medieval times that we're talking about, when the child was born, it turned out she wasn't having one, she was having two babies, and they were Siamese twins, so they were actually attached. So this was nature's way of doing a natural selection process when clearly she was in distress. But I'd interfered with nature. And, of course, when this baby came out with two heads and four arms and four legs, of course, the people in the village naturally assumed that I was in league with the devil. Because what else would they think? Back in those days, you know, someone has a Siamese twins. Now it's you know, it creates a furore. They carted me off. And there were a couple of things that happened. I mean, the main one was that I vowed at that point when I was tied to the stake that I wasn't going to use my healing powers again because they led to me being punished. And so that was a commitment that had been held over me. But also I felt quite let down by my mother, who I felt hadn't been able to protect me.
Yeah.
And what I realized in the transformational part, particularly when I was able to confront and speak to the people that had been involved with this, was that a really clear message came through that I was told not to interfere with nature. I'd been given a warning that this was not an appropriate time to use my healing gifts, and I didn't listen, so I was working inappropriately. And I also realized that my mother in that life was my mother in my current life. And that also made a huge amount of sense, because my mother in this life, when I was growing up, was constantly saying, can you be a bit more normal? Can you not fit in with people? Do you think you could just, why can't you get a job in a bank? Do you have to be going out there and doing all these strange things all the time?
Yes.
So, and the vow was that if I was going to go back and put myself in challenging situations, she was going to be right there behind me, keeping me safe.
Yeah.
So huge healing occurred. And, of course, what I was able to do was to bring in the commitment, the contract that I'd said, where I had said, I'm never going to do this again. And I was able to get rid of it. I was given permission to let that go. And I was able to rewrite the contract that said, I will now use my healing gifts with discernment and when it's appropriate. And there need be no fear whatsoever that this time I will be safe, this time I will be protected. And, of course, having done that, it completely cleared the way, and I've been working non-stop with past lives and on my spiritual path ever since. But I do believe that the majority of people who are here right now, who are working in the healing profession and who are following their spiritual path, I do believe that all of them will have had other lives where they were healers, where they were persecuted somewhere along the line for their gifts and their abilities. And it will be the ones that manage to resolve the blocks, or who perhaps didn't agree to be blocked, or didn't let fear get in the way, the ones that vowed that they would continue onwards, who don't necessarily need to go in and clear those things. It's only if a block was put in place. But it would be very surprising for people who aren't healers to not have had a life where they were persecuted at one point or another.
Yes. Yes, it does seem common, and I appreciate how you consciously stated your intent in this life. I think that's such an important part of this, is to overcome whatever those blockages are. I mean, sometimes we know about them, but it doesn't mean that we deal with them so directly, I guess, and that's what I appreciate about what you just shared.
Yes, thank you. And I do think that, particularly at this time on the planet, that so many more people are waking up and asking those questions. I know it's a huge question for my clients that come to see me. Why am I here? What's my purpose? What am I supposed to be doing? People really have a drive now to understand. And, of course, it usually presupposes if they don't feel like they're on their path, or they're not feeling completely satisfied, or it feels like something's blocking them, there usually is something skirting around in the background. And as I said, that's why I see this work as being a bit like clutter clearing, because we can ask that question of their higher mind when they're in the trance state and say, can we just go and explore, is there something, whether it be a vow or a commitment, or was there an experience from another lifetime that is actually holding this person back? And the answers that come through are quite extraordinary. They really are.
Yeah.
And the transformations, once people heal it and they change those contracts, the changes that I've seen happen in people's lives really are quite mind-blowing, which is partly why I wrote the book, because I really wanted to share with people just the incredible things that can happen.
Yes, yes. You know, as you talk about the trance state, Lorraine, I know that many of us have never been hypnotized. I will tell you, you know what? I'll even use my own experience. I was hypnotized as a child, and we played with hypnosis as young teens, and I once hypnotized someone else, and it worked. And I don't even know how I did it, but it was somewhat dangerous because this person started shaking all over. It was really quite a jarring experience of my life, Lorraine, and I haven't ever shared this on this show. And I have no idea. You know, we were just playing. We were playing. We must have been about 12 or 13. We were at a slumber party, and we were all playing, and someone tried to hypnotize me, and, you know, we were playing. So anyway, this is my own somewhat challenging memory of hypnosis. I have never personally been hypnotized, and I've never really even thought about how that is probably somewhat of a conscious block because of what happened. I think that a lot of people are subconscious, have some reason that, they're a little bit leery of the trance state.
Yes.
And what is it? Help us. Help me. Help
yes.
us all together. Help us
Absolutely.
Clear that.
Yes, indeed. And I come across this so often. And it's really interesting because I've just been teaching up at UCL, University College London, a group of young doctors. And for them going out and practicing the techniques that I'm teaching them, when I'm teaching them clinical hypnosis, they all come across people that say, oh, no, you're going to control me, and oh, no, don't be doing that, don't be playing with my mind. And even when I tell them on the first day that by the end of the day, not only will they have experienced hypnosis, but they'll all hypnotize each other, they look at me like I'm crazy. And part of the problem is that there is a real misconception about what hypnosis is. Because through the years, when people have seen stage hypnosis, or we hear about Svengali-type characters that are able to control people's minds and make them do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do, and it's given it a bad name over the years. And the key thing for people to be aware of is that hypnosis is actually a very naturally occurring state, and every single person on the planet is going in and out of hypnosis throughout the day anyway, at various different times in the day. They just don't realize that it's actually hypnosis or a trance state. So anytime you're daydreaming, when your mind isn't focused on what's going on around you, you're in a mild trance. Anytime you fall asleep in front of the TV, or if you're traveling on public transport and you kind of nod off a little bit, but you don't fall asleep completely because you know that you have to move at a certain point, you're in hypnosis. When people go on long journeys and they're driving, particularly late at night, and they're very tired, and they find that their attention flags, and sometimes they might even find that they veer across the road a little bit, and then suddenly they come back to and they become aware of what they're doing, they were in hypnosis. If people are reading a book and they get lost in the story, or they're watching a movie and they get totally engrossed in it, or they're involved in a task, so sports people, for instance, or artists, or people who play music, who get so involved in the act of what they're doing, that sometimes people are calling their names and they don't hear them because they're so immersed in what they're doing. All of that is hypnosis. All of that is a trance state. And the way I like to explain it is that hypnosis and meditation, that focused state of attention that people go into when they meditate, are the same state. It's just what you do when you get there that's different. So if I say to people, I'm going to put you into a state of meditation now, they all go, yes, and they kind of breathe a sigh of relief because they know that that is going to be something pleasant. If I say, I'm going to put you in hypnosis, they all tense up and say, oh, don't control me. So when I remind them that actually the two states are exactly the same, all it is when you focus your attention on one thing to the exclusion of anything else, and in hypnosis it just happens to be the hypnotherapist's voice. And then quite often I'll guide them on a little journey. So I may have them imagine that they're going down a staircase, and as they take each step down, they become more and more relaxed with each step, and they can really enjoy the process, and they can visualize themselves floating into a beautiful, comfortable space. Suddenly, the whole thing is much less scary. And when they know they're in control, I always use the analogy that I'm like the sat-nav. I'm like the spiritual sat-nav guiding them on their journey. But all the way through the whole process, they are in control. They're driving the car. So they go as fast as they wish. They can stop if they wish. They can even go in a completely different direction if they wish. But obviously, I know where it is that they need to go. So I point out that it's quite helpful for them to just listen to what I'm saying. So it's a really pleasant and delightful state. And I guarantee that once people actually do experience it, and this happens across the board with all of my medical students, that after the first day, they all look at me and they say, wow, why weren't we taught this before?
Wow.
And I say, because the medical profession is quite slow on the uptake. That's why. You know, in 1955, the British Medical Association recommended that all doctors be taught hypnosis. But that paperwork kind of got buried a little bit. So I'm very pleased that I am now able to get to many of them to teach, but it's only the minority. It's only the students that are open to the idea. My hope is that they will all start to get it. But yes. The state is one that is just absolutely delightful and relaxing, and a lot of the time when it gets to the end of the session, they say, you know what, I really didn't want to come back.
Yes. Wow, you're helping me right in this moment, and I know you're helping the audience at the same time, because you're helping me to realize I'm kind of a late learner in some ways when it comes to, I came from a very conservative background, and part of this show, just so you know, my audience has come to know this, is my own discovery process. I'm still
Wonderful.
Discovering so many things. I am not the person who's known this all my life, or, you know, has done yoga all my life. And that's something I was going to mention right now. I recently started yoga for the first
right.
time. I have been afraid of it my whole life because I felt uncoordinated. And yet, I love it. I love it. In fact, anyone out there who feels uncoordinated, go do it. You'll see. If you have a gentle teacher, you can do it. But what I wanted to say is every time we do yoga at the end, she guides us. Oh, I love that so much. I mean, I've been to things with guided meditations, but something about yoga, I will tell you, Lorraine, and her voice and how this woman knows what she's doing, it's amazing. And you just described exactly a very similar process, and you helped me right in this moment realize this is not something to fear at all. It's something you already know, like you say. And then there's so many other ways, like you say. I used to play the piano. Many of us do. You talked about playing instruments. All of us know this experience of memorizing a song, and you're playing at a recital or something, and you are literally in a trance. That's how you play the song. And if you get out of it, and this happened to me as a child, where I broke the cycle and stopped, you have to get back in again. And so anyway, I felt it. Thank you. Thank you. That is a
You're
beautiful
very welcome.
Explanation, and I think we can all relate to this. Thank you.
And the wonderful thing about going into that state is that people get access to information that's been hidden, so stored away in the subconscious. And that's the secret for me, that all the answers to all the problems that we ever have are there within us. And the majority of people are looking outside of themselves to find answers to what will make them happy or what,
yeah.
you know, what's causing them problems. And I know for sure that the answers are right there inside. So as they look out for, you know, to try and find a relationship or the next big home or, you know, a better car or a better job, thinking that those external things will make them happy, I know that it's completely the other way around, that it's actually about changing what goes on the inside. And when we change that, then what we experience on the outside changes as well.
Yes. I really love this term, inner freedom, that you use, because it's what we all seek. And I think that sometimes we don't realize that this past life work is a gateway to inner freedom, as are other things. But I mean, it's what we all want, is to be free and to feel free. That's the key, to feel free, truly.
Absolutely. And I think that there's a lot of talk at the moment about remaining in the present and living in the now and staying in the present moment, which is absolutely where we need to be.
Yes.
Difficulty with that for many people is that buried below the surface, that there are traumas, there are unresolved issues, unfinished business, all kinds of things that need to be addressed. And that's why I often compare this work to Feng Shui, because I compare the psyche to being like the home that you live in. And if buried deep in the basement of a home, there is all kinds of junk and there's all kinds of stuff festering away. Eventually, over time, that's going to permeate up into the house, and it's going to spoil whatever we have there that we're trying to make beautiful. So for me, it's really, really crucial that we do pay attention to the inner world, and we do go in and look to see what may be there that is unfinished, unresolved, and that we deal with it, that we work through these things. And what I'm finding for many, many people is that they may well have, on their life journey, worked with particular issues. Many people will have childhood issues, or, you know, it might be a parental thing. They have an issue with their mother or their father, or relationships per se. And they feel like they've worked on it. And I hear this time and time again with my clients. They say, look, I've been working on this thing, and I thought I was done with it. And I know myself, even in my own experience, this has happened to me. And suddenly you're confronted with the same issue. Now, it's a slightly different version of the issue, but it comes round again. And what I've learned about life is that we're constantly moving on an upward spiral. So rather than things being linear, where we tick a box and then we move to the next stage, we're constantly going back round on ourselves and sort of working through the layers of these things. And I'm finding now that people are in a space where they're ready or they're prepared to deal with the deeper and the more intense versions of the issues. So I think lots of people on the spiritual path are going through major upheavals and going through major struggles as they're being confronted with these aspects of themselves, the shadow side, if you like, that I think for many of us we try to suppress, we try to deny that aspect of ourselves. But I believe that being a spiritual being means that we have to have total acceptance for all aspects of ourselves. Yeah. We have to be able to unconditionally love the dark and the light, the good and the bad. And also we have to be in a space that for me is the most important space of non-judgment of all of that. We have to recognize that created within this rich tapestry of life, there needs to be a balance of all things, so the good and the bad. And it's only when we judge these things that actually it brings us into difficulty. So it's amazing. It's so incredible at the moment when I see the bravery of the people who are really willing to dive in head first and face these things that have been challenging them.
I have a question for you coming from this. Is this relates to karma and the clearing as well. Let's suppose that you feel a connection, you know, the more aware that you become, you find some life that is darker. You know, maybe you were a warrior, you know, who knows? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are many dark things in the history of this planet. And you know, I don't even know, well, we won't get into future lives, right? I have another more esoteric question coming up. We'll keep that for now.
Okay.
So let's suppose you feel this connection. I have a friend, for example. I can think of, you know, she's just certain she was, you know, sacrificing people on an altar. And she speaks openly of this. And she feels that she runs into people that she actually had this happen. And so the question, what if you become concerned about your own karma? Is that you begin to say, oh, my goodness, you know, I had this life that oh, it seems really dark, and yes, I want to clear it, but what about the karma? And can that even inspire you to do even more good in the world, perhaps? And I don't know if that's a healthy motivation, if you should naturally be doing it. Again, this is kind of a complex. You see the intricacy of this little question is that you become aware of this life. You think, gosh, there's got to be karma associated with that. And you don't want to be afraid of the karma, Lorraine. You don't want to be afraid of it. You want to work with it. So help us. This is kind of even beyond clearing, the whole karma aspect. Help us with this.
Yes, absolutely. So, and I do have a chapter about it in the book. And I think that over the years, the idea of karma has been kind of misrepresented because many people think of it as a punishment and reward. So they may believe that if they were bad in a previous life, that they're going to be punished for it, or sometimes people believe that if they're having difficulties in this life that they must have been bad in a previous life.
Yeah.
And I know that was a line that I used to say a lot whenever anything bad happened to me. It felt like karma. But I believe that karma is more about cause and effect and balance rather than punishment or reward. And having explored the soul's journey and not just doing past lives, but actually traveling into the space between lives and actually looking into future lives, what I'm starting to get a sense of is the fact that the soul on its journey has to experience everything. That a soul that's coming down into the earth plane to learn and to grow and to evolve has to go into both the shadow and the light. So there may well have been lifetimes, and again, it would be very surprising if there weren't, where somebody would have been the perpetrator. And, of course, there will be lifetimes when somebody had been the victim. And it's interesting you talk about the sacrifice lifetime, because again, I know that I've been there both as a sacrificial victim and as the sacrificer. And when I did the exploration work in my own past life and was feeling a sense of absolute guilt at what I had done, and these people, it was a Mayan lifetime.
Yeah.
Of course, when I had actually stepped into the life and into the body of this person that I was, I absolutely believed with every fiber of my being that I was doing the right thing in that lifetime.
Yes.
So we have to look at intention. And again, I've experienced this when I had a client who was a Mongol soldier in a previous life. And again, this was a question she came to me and said, am I being punished? Things keep going wrong. Am I being punished because I was somebody bad in a previous life? I'm sure I've done damage. In fact, she had a disabled son and she thought this was her punishment.
Yeah.
And in my past life, when I was the Mayan high priest, I met with the victims, the people that I had put to death. And they all forgave me utterly. And they said, we wanted to understand our chosen experience on the earth plane in that lifetime was we wanted to know what it was like to be a human sacrifice. So thank you very much, because you enabled us to have that experience fully and completely. And therefore, we've ticked that box, so we don't have to do that kind of suffering ever again. So we honor you and we thank you. And I was able to release then all of this guilt that I'd been carrying, which was quite extra, and I had no idea that I was, although, you know, Irish Catholic family, so we do guilt very well.
Yes.
But I was able to release all of that. And then with my client, who had been the Mongol soldier, what was really interesting was that, again, when she went into the body, he was doing what he believed was right for his king, for his leader. And again, it was intention. So he firmly believed that the fights and the battles and the men that he killed, that it was his duty to do that. And he was being very honourable. It was a very honourable society at that time. But what happened for him was that, because there was no guilt while he thought it was honourable, in one of the villages that they raided, the men had all gone off to fight, and it was only women and children that were left in the village. And because the other soldiers were so fired up and they were so gung-ho, if you like, they went in and they murdered and killed all of these women and children anyway, because they were all fired up. And in that moment, something in him snapped, and something said, that's not right. So he suddenly felt guilt. He suddenly felt this overwhelming sense of anguish for these people who'd been murdered. He was reminded of his own family. And he then realized that he couldn't do this anymore. So he didn't want to dishonor his king. So what he did was the next battle that they went into, instead of going in and fighting, he kind of went in with his weapons lowered, knowing that he would be killed. And when he died, he vowed that he had this belief that he was a bad man, and he vowed that he would almost carry that guilt as a to make sure that he never did anything bad ever again. And same thing, we brought in the souls, all of the people that had been killed, and they said the same thing. They said, you were just doing your job, and therefore we salute you, because you did an incredible job. You were fully there, you were fully present, and all of the souls that had come in, the women and children all came in, and they said, you know, and we honour you too, because we saw how brave you were and how you honoured us in that lifetime, so thank you. So it was incredibly moving, incredibly powerful, but we released that contract and we released the guilt. We said, you no longer need to be punished in this way. You no longer need to punish yourself or believe that you're being punished. There's nothing to be punished for. It just is what it is. You were just playing out that role in that lifetime. And the guilt was alleviated. And then what I asked her to do was to go in and have a look at the balance, to go and have a look at the flip side, to go check out the lifetimes where perhaps she may have been working on the opposite side of the scale. And she saw a collage of lifetimes, one of them in the First World War, and she was a female, she was a nurse in the trenches trying to help these soldiers who had been really, really badly damaged. And she gave her all to these soldiers, and in the end she died as a young woman through literally working herself to the bone to try and help to heal these young men and then a variety of other lives as well, where she'd been a healer and she'd been there trying to help people. So it was incredibly moving, because she got to see that it's not about punishment. And she got to see that nothing that happened to her in this life was a punishment, but that she had chosen it to understand what that experience was like, and that her son's disability in this life was actually an incredible gift. And she saw that he had been with her in many other lives, and that the challenge for them was to experience unconditional love, no matter what the circumstances, and to be grateful for everything that they had. And it was great, because she was able to then just go and enjoy her relationship with her son, which was extraordinarily loving, and not feel that she'd failed him.
Yes, yes. These are pretty deep lessons. I know that it's so difficult sometimes for people to deal with the shadow, and yet, you know, it really is so very important, as you say, to recognize the fabric of the reality in which you are in. You know, one of the things I've often heard is it seems like so many people seem to have some connection to maybe ancient Rome, you know, where a lot of the leaders were, and many of the people, it's now known that these people consumed a lot of lead, for example, and, you know, that was going to have an influence on their minds. And that then leads me into this question of, you know, you might have a connection to some life where you really were mentally impaired. I mean, and so your behavior was very unusual, and a lot of those Rome lives could actually be that way if you were in a leadership role of some sort. And this gets into soul agreements, is because I wonder, and what you just said suggests this, and what others have said, is that you're really there as part of the agreements with other people in a way, because you yourself are not fully conscious in that. I mean, I don't know. I'll let you answer the question. I don't want to answer it for you, but it's a really somewhat challenging thing to look into is, you know, when you are impaired, you are actually the soul who is impaired in a life, and things are happening around you based on that impairment. What is your journey as a soul, and how does it relate to your agreements, this concept of soul agreements with other people? I wonder if you could explore that a little more.
Yes, absolutely. So we all decide, and again, my explorations into the space between lives, on the mission that we're going to work through in our lifetime. So before we come down to the earth plane, we will make a decision about what we're going to work on. We're also going to make a decision about what kind of body that we need to be in. We're also going to choose the family that will provide us with the perfect situation and circumstances. And bear in mind that that doesn't always mean that we pick the easy route, which is usually my job to pick the more challenging route. So we'll set all of that up in advance. But of course, then what happens is that for the experience to be, you know, a thorough learning experience, we acquire amnesia on the way down into the body. And when we're in the earth plane, we've got complete and utter free will to do as we, whatever we wish. And the idea is that we're meant to work through those lessons. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that in order to help us, we do have signposts along the way. And those signposts may be people who appear, they may be situations. So when those little synchronicities happen, sometimes that they're a prompt to remind us of who we are and what we're meant to be doing. But that element, that idea of free will, means that we have many, many choices. So in the cases of the, you know, some of these people that were in Rome that perhaps consumed lead or found themselves in situations where they became mentally impaired, well, I would say that there was kind of two options there. One may have been that they actually chose to have the experience of what it would be like to really test themselves. Can you still be the loving being? Can you still find that way back to yourself, even with this mental disability? And again, I would suggest that that's not for the faint-hearted. And I would suggest that that wouldn't be for souls that were actually coming in on a sort of, you know, a lower vibration or young souls. It would probably be for the ones that may have gone through many, many difficult lessons, who think, right, I'm really going to up the ante this time.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm going to put myself into a body that actually isn't going to function, you know, in the way that I need it to then see what I can accomplish. Or it could just be that actually in that state of free will, the person made certain choices that actually were a distraction or that led to them having challenges. It may not necessarily have been their life path, but again, I see that sometimes when we're on the earth plane, there are distractions that will lure people away, and sometimes it might be relationships or it might be alcohol, it's food, it's quite often those things that are kind of dense earth plane energetic things that you know, we get caught up, we get lost in the pleasure of the earthly body and you know, the earthly senses, and sometimes we just forget who we are. And if somebody does go through an entire lifetime without remembering and they do get caught up in the maelstrom of all of those things, it may just be that they get to the end of their lifetime having not accomplished the mission, and then they're just going to have to come back and go through it again.
Yes, yes. I have one more question that's a little esoteric, because we're taking this to graduate level almost. I hate to go too far into this, but just a really quick question. And then I want to talk about soulmates, because I know you talk about that in your book, and everybody wants to hear about that topic. But really quick, what do you say to this business of time? I know that we often hear that time is not truly linear. Do you believe that these lives are actually have some linearity to them in our development, or if they're simultaneous? Because I've heard both. I've heard both theories, and I'm not sure what you may say to that. I mean, is there a past, I guess, in the understanding of time?
Well, yes, and actually what I believe is that both answers are correct, because when we're on the earth plane, time has a linear appearance. So, you know, we can track back through that time, and then we're aware of our potential future. But once we travel out of the linear earth plane up into the spirit realms, or into our trance states, as it were, then there is no concept of time in the same way that we perceive it. And so when we're in that space, I do believe that it's simultaneous, that all of these lives are happening at the same time. And it just depends on which one we tap into. And as we drop into a particular lifetime, from the earth perspective, it then becomes linear.
Yes, yes. Do you believe we can bring skills forward from other lives? I've heard that said as well, that if we had some life that was a masterful speaker, that once we become very conscious, we might be able to gain that skill in this life. Is that possible from your perspective? Have you studied that at all?
I do believe that that's possible, absolutely. And I have a wonderful example of she was actually a colleague of mine who she'd had a bit of an interest in singing. She had a bit of a passion for it, but nobody, you know, it'd never been that outstanding. She was, you know, good, but not something, it wasn't something she was going to pursue for any, you know, nobody's actually said it was outstanding in any way. And then she found herself in a past life as a blues jazz singer down in New Orleans, probably in the 20s or 30s. And I have to say, she invited me to a concert that she was doing some months later. And she's a tiny little thing. And when she opened her mouth to sing, I mean, she nearly blew everybody out of the room. It was so extraordinary. And she now has a manager. She now has an agent. And this ability, this talent is something suddenly now that she's actually pursuing. So, yes, I really do believe that when we open those doors, we remind ourselves of what our soul is capable of. And that memory, that recognition, it doesn't go away then. You can't then forget that aspect of yourself. It's too deeply embedded. And then, of course, people have choice about whether they want to pursue it or whether they want to follow that particular path or not. But definitely. And I had a client recently who, again, part of her question was about her kind of psychic abilities that had been blocked. And she found herself in a lifetime again where she'd been punished for using those abilities. But she went into the space where they had operated perfectly for her in that lifetime, and when she came out of the trance state, suddenly everything was clearer, and she already knew that this block had gone and that information was starting to flow to her in a way that made much more sense. So, absolutely, I do really, really believe that that is possible.
Yes. Oh, that's wonderful. And that is a wonderful story. I appreciate that. Okay, you know, the time is going by so fast, and we could probably spend an entire show on this topic, and I think I probably will start exploring this more on the show because there's such curiosity about it. I know you have a chapter on soulmates, and we can probably only brush the surface, but I wonder if you could just talk about that a little bit, because I know so many people are curious about that. It's a very passionate topic for so many people.
It is, and again, it's something that I work on a lot with people, and what I've learned over the years, which I think is really, really reassuring, because so many people believe that they have one soulmate, that they're looking for the one, and I think often people are in relationships, and if they're not working, they may think, oh, well, clearly this person isn't the one, so, you know, they kind of move on, and they're seeking, they're searching that person that is going to be the mirror of themselves or feel like their other half. But actually what I've learned is that we have many soulmates. We don't just have one. We have a huge soul family, and there may be certain souls within that soul family that are more significant to us than others. But generally, soulmates are volunteers who've come down from our soul group to help us to learn certain lessons. So we may even have many, many soulmates that appear in one lifetime, and the soulmates may not necessarily even be relationships or romantic partners. But each person that's of significance that comes into your life that teaches you something is going to be a soulmate. And the thing that is quite shocking for many people is that it's often the people that challenge us the most who are our closest soulmates. So the ones that really push our buttons and the one that really gives us a hard time and make us rise above and you know, really take a stand and sort of, you know, move through things, those are the ones that are our closest soulmates.
And, you know, we miss that so much. And I heard that in another perspective once, and I started to think, gosh, you know, I started thinking of different people who've been challenging, and I thought, we must be best friends across the veil.
Absolutely.
And it
what
helps.
That does,
you know, it really helps.
Yes, it does. It does. Because I do believe that what we need to do is have gratitude for everyone and everything in our life, even the bad stuff. Because when we turn that around, rather than thinking, why did you do this to me? And we blame people for saying, you hurt me, you did this to me. When we turn the question around and say, oh, hang on a minute, if I take responsibility for myself here and the fact that I probably chose this before I arrived on some level, why would I pick this? What am I learning? And for me, that's freedom. That's empowerment. Yeah. When nobody out there can actually do anything to us, when we understand that we picked it, and when we say, why did I choose it? Then we're the one in control. And when we turn it around and we say, thank you for challenging me. You know, I was able to say to my mother, after I had that discovery of why she was so overprotective in this life, I was able to turn around and say, thank you, mother, for being who you are. And thank you for being absolutely what I needed you to be. And she said, but I drove you crazy when you were younger. I said, yes, but that was the agreement. So well done.
Yes.
Thank you so much. And, of course, when we turn it around and focus on gratitude, it, you know, it goes back to the law of attraction. The more gratitude we focus on, the more we have things in our life that we get to be grateful for. So it just flows. It works so beautifully.
Yes, it's just so liberating to hear this, the way you describe it, because, I mean, I suppose it truly is inner freedom, and we're bringing this full circle in the sense of, in fact, now that we're getting close to the last 5 minutes of the show, and I want to be able to have you leave us with, okay, you know, what are your, how do you want to leave this in terms of finding our full potential, you know, how this really allows us to live a full life, this work, and please do talk about some of your work in the process too, any events you have coming up, just what you'd like the audience to know about your work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, obviously, there's the book that is not just, it's a collection of stories and transcripts of the actual sessions that my clients went through, but there are many exercises in the book as well that are designed to help people to move on, to start to get an awareness of who they really are and why they're here, and a sense of some of the journeys that they may have been on themselves. But I've also produced a couple of CDs that support that and guide people on the journeys into the past and to be able to heal the inner child and work with their ancestors. So Inner Freedom 1 and 2, and Inner Freedom 1 is the kind of current life dealing with accessing your highest potential and becoming empowered and working on attracting love and abundance. And then the second one is more about the esoteric journey, so focusing on the past lives and healing and looking at the ancestral stuff. So they will actually assist and help people. But I'm going to be coming back to California in May.
Oh.
And I'm hoping to do some talks there and maybe do some workshops. And I'll, you know, if people did want to connect with me while I'm there, then I'd love to do that too. So.
Oh, well, that's wonderful to know. I hope someday
yes,
you come up to Oregon.
Yes, and perhaps I can guide
you. That's where I am. I'm in Oregon.
Right.
Hello?
Yes, Oregon. I'll have to put Oregon onto the list so that I can come and take you on a journey into your past life, perhaps.
Oh, wow. That would be wonderful. Now that I don't have to fear it anymore. And I want to
Absolutely.
Remind the audience out there that your website is and your book, there's a link both to your book links off
yeah.
to where they can purchase it on the site. And also we have a link to your website. And if they can't see it because they listen in different ways, innerjourneys.co.uk is where they can learn all about you. And I want to say, finally, you ended really on gratitude. And I love how so many of my guests seem to wrap up there. It's very interesting because that's exactly where I am right now. I am just so thankful for you, Lorraine. And I felt this was just a wonderful conversation. So interesting. Thank you so much for coming on my show. I really appreciate it.
But thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful.
Well, and I do hope that it must be awfully, I have no idea what time it is there in London. I know it's certainly later evening. But thank you so much for spending your Friday evening with us. And I do hope to learn so much more about your work. It's just fascinating, and I encourage the audience to do the same. So thanks again, and take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you have a wonderful evening.
Thanks, you too.
Okay, we have just 2 minutes left. I'm going to quickly wrap up. We have another guest coming on Monday, returning guest, one of the favorites of the show. I know he has quite a body of work on the show now, is Dr. Alan G. Hunter's coming back. And he's going to talk about yet another one of his many books. And this time we're going to talk about the soul work of telling your story, which is the topic of his book, Write Your Memoir. And Alan Hunter is actually an expert in therapeutic writing and in memoir writing as well. But even if you've never thought that you would write a memoir, I encourage you to listen to this show Monday, March 31st at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, because what he is going to show is that when you write about parts of your life, even for yourself, when you surface those memories, it is a highly transformational process in itself and can help you live more fully. So it's very much in concert with what Lorraine had to share today as well. It frees you. It brings you more alive. And these are all tools that these wonderful guests are bringing to us to help us all do this. So again, Monday, March 31st at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, Dr. Alan G. Hunter is coming back, and that show is already out there, and you can take a look at it and make a note for yourselves. If you're listening to this show in the archive, thank you so much for being here. I welcome you across time, as I like to do, and I want to encourage people to discover the archive in frontierbeyondfear.com. That's where you can learn all about this show. I have an upcoming appearance. I will be at the Portland Body, Mind, Spirit Expo April 5th and 6th. I will have a booth there. Come and see me. Also, and I'm just going to be freely talking to people at the booth as I did in Los Angeles. I enjoy talking with all of you. And I will have books of guests at the booth as well that you can browse through and just enjoy. And if you see something you like, you can go and purchase it online. I just want them to be out there for you to see. I will also be speaking Saturday, April 5th at 11 a.m. Pacific on the topic Heaven on Earth, in room number 1 at the Oregon Convention Center at the Body, Mind, Spirit Expo. There is a link up on the frontierbeyondfear.com page, and you can learn all about the expo as well as a coupon. It's very inexpensive to get in. I think it's only $12 for the whole weekend if you have the coupon. And I really encourage you because there are a lot of leaders there. In fact, Sonia Grace is going to be there speaking. And the admission fee will get you into her talks as well. So as the live audience leaves us, have a wonderful day, evening, however this show finds you. And thank you for being here so much. And now we're in the podcast really quick. I'm just going to totally wrap up here and say that I hope that you are finding that freedom more and more. I know I am. I am just so appreciating these guests coming on the show. I think that we are all learning together. And that is the wonder of all of this journey that we're taking here. So I am appreciative of the community around this show, and I am so appreciative of the people coming on, sharing these very approachable tools that are out there for us. So, again, thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful day, evening, and just find peace along your path today and enjoy life because it's worth focusing on the joy. Find the thing that gives you joy and spend some time with that this weekend if you're listening before the weekend or whenever you're listening. Find the joy. Thank you so much.